I am so excited to announce that we have a new sponsor who will be bringing you transcripts for each episode of the Schoolhouse Rocked podcast. MakeCrate provides your homeschooler with the STEM skills they need for the future. Fun, hands-on electronics kits paired with an online learning platform teach your middle or high schooler engineering and coding fundamentals right at home. No technical experience required. Order your MakeCrate today at makecrate.club/SR. Hey everyone, this is Yvette Hampton. Welcome back to the Schoolhouse Rocked podcast. I hope you are having a great day and enjoying this podcast. I sure am enjoying recording this for you. I have the great opportunity of getting to meet so many different people and having so many different guests. Some of them are people that I know personally. Some of them are people that I have never met in person, but have had the privilege of getting to know just through the homeschool community. And today is one of those guests. I'm really excited to have him on. His name is Jim Hodges. And he is an audiobook reader. I guess that's what your title would be, right, Jim?
Does that sound good? On my tax forms, I put recording artist.
Oh, recording artist. That's even better.
I mean,
I love it.
It sounds so official.
It really does. It really does. So, Jim, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
Yes. Yes. Our recording artist. I love it.
You're a recording artist too, you know.
I guess I would be a recording artist as well, since we're both recording.
There you go.
Tell us about you and your family.
My wife and I have been married 39 years. We have three grown children. Luke, married with four children. Shannon, married with four children. Matthew, married with no children. All three of whom we homeschooled through high school. We began with Shannon in kindergarten, Luke we homeschooled. He was in third grade, and so we started with him homeschooling. Shannon went to kindergarten for 6 months, and then we pulled her out. And Matthew was like two, and we never. Well, we looked back once or twice, but we never went back. And so Matthew's never known anything but homeschooling. Mm. Shannon, 6 months of kindergarten, and Luke, you know, first and second grade.
Yeah.
But we homeschooled him all the way through high school, and by all outward indications, we did a pretty good job with them and with their education.
Yeah. And so you actually started this back in the late 80s, right? Was when you started homeschooling.
88. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was pretty early in the homeschooling history, basically. I think it was the 70s, maybe mid late 70s, that the movement really kind of got started. Mm-hmm. I was not interested, quite frankly. Monica was very interested. And so we came to an agreement, look, all right, let's homeschool one child 1 year. And at the end of the year, we'll take another look at this. And as I said, it took, you know, 4 months. Mm-hmm. And we pulled Shannon out of kindergarten and decided, yeah, this is something that we can do. And this is something that we want to do. I just wasn't convinced that we could.
Sure.
And then when we started, it was like, okay, yeah, we can figure this out.
Yeah.
We can figure this out.
Yeah. And you were figuring it out back before we had all of the resources that we have today. Cause back then you didn't have that many. You maybe had a Becca and maybe a few others.
Konos. We used Kona, which Kona's, I don't know how many people have ever even heard of it.
I've heard of it.
It was a, I forget what the phrase is that they use, but it's basically, here's a basic subject, build on that. Mm-hmm. You know, everything is tangentially off of this. And it was based on scripture. I think by the time we pulled Shannon out at Christmas, we'd gotten to like Genesis chapter 1, verse 4. Because everything just went, as things grew, they just grew and grew and grew.
Sure.
And so we were very slow getting through that. We ended up with a pretty eclectic mix of resources that we used, and lots of field trips and hands-on activities and things like that. But we, you know, it was a lot of work.
Sure.
It's a lot of work. There's no question about it.
It still is.
It was a huge commitment of time and energy and effort and money. And but it was something that we felt like this is what God wanted us to do. So, you know, just do it.
That's right. That's right. And it turned out really well for your family. So you were a 20-year Navy.
Navy vet. Mm-hmm.
Vet, right. Mm-hmm. And so did you travel? Did your family travel through your time in the Navy?
We were stationed in a number of different places. Yes.
Okay.
By the time I got into high school, I had moved like 8 times.
Wow.
And so when I got out of high school and I went to college for a year and then I joined the Navy and we moved every 4 years, 3 or 4 years after that. So we homeschooled actually in Pennsylvania. We were stationed outside of Philadelphia. And they had a put together a portfolio system, have it assessed by a certified teacher, standardized mm-hmm. testing, and then they say, okay, third grade happened. You know, New York was, tell us every book you're going to use, give us your quarterly reports, you know, they were just insane of oversight and provided absolutely no assistance, of course, just, sure. You know, you just feed us information. And from there, we moved to Oklahoma.
Oh,
which is
big difference.
The law there is, you want to homeschool? Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Yes.
Absolutely no oversight whatsoever. So we were very happy to leave New York and very happy to get to Oklahoma, where we just didn't have to worry about. But you know, we were responsible parents. We took that responsibility very seriously. And you know, the concern is legitimate. If there's no oversight, some people are going to let things slide. Well, of course they are. Public schools let things slide. I mean, everybody lets things slide that they can get away with. And so it's really up to the parents to be committed to it and responsible with homeschool.
How did your extended family react to you homeschooling in the beginning?
Is that legal? Was the mm-hmm. first, you know, question. You know, why do you feel like you need to do this? And for us, it was really because we'd become Christians and neither one of our families were Christians. And we mm-hmm. wanted to teach our kids our faith,
sure.
transmit our faith to them in the midst of their education. Mm-hmm. We had kind of a built-in excuse by being in the military. Mm-hmm. No, we just don't want to take our kids and have them dropped into this school and then pulled out and dropped into that school and then pulled out.
Right.
We just figure that since we know we're going to be transferred every 3 or 4 years, we just figured we would homeschool and you know, it's legal and, you know, we're responsible parents. And they were like, they were a little bit, you know, curious about
sure.
it and not very supportive. But the real hammer kind of came down as far as their reaction to our homeschooling. When our oldest son, being a typical firstborn, quite the achiever, very mature, entered high school. And they said, so what are you going to do for high school? We said, mm-hmm. well, we're going to keep homeschooling them. And they just kind of blew up like, oh, you're going to ruin them.
Right.
and that high school firstborn son also joined the Navy.
Okay.
And the Navy found him to be smart enough and well-educated enough and a high enough caliber person that they paid for him to get his Harvard MBA.
Wow.
So, you know, I think we did okay with the high school training as far as preparing him for life. You know, he went on and got his 4-year degree and then the Navy said, you know, you're good enough. We want... apply to any one of the top 10 colleges in the country for a master's in business administration, mm-hmm. and we'll pay for whichever one you want to go to.
Wow.
And Harvard accepted him. And so he just graduated last spring.
Graduated. Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so
exciting.
You know,
yep.
Homeschooling can work out for you.
It certainly can. It certainly can. So now, would you have ever thought at that time you were in the military, homeschooling your kids, would you have seen yourself speaking at homeschool conventions as you're doing now? So this is a new gig for you. You're going to homeschool conventions around the country, around the world, because you're actually going into Canada.
Going into Canada for the first time this year, yeah. I've got customers in Canada. I've got customers in England. I've got customers in South Africa. I've got customers in Australia and New Zealand and Singapore. And so I am international, even though I haven't been to the majority of those places.
Yeah.
My voice has and my product has. So when I was in the Navy, no, I had no plans to start an audiobook business. That was actually a prompting from my wife, Monica.
Okay.
We had finished probably 19 years of Navy, and we were out on a weekly date night at a Cracker Barrel, and she asked me, so, you know, you're going to be retiring in a year. What are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do next? And I said, well, there's this big base that right there and at Tinker Air Force Base, I could get a job there. I'm sure I'm retired military. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma City is the state capital of Oklahoma. I'm sure I could get a job, you know, a state job as a military retiree. I'd do office administration. I'm really good at it. And she said, well, you know, forget all that. What if you didn't have to worry about money? You could just pick any job you wanted and it would be sufficient income for you. Mm-hmm. Then what? I said, oh, I'd record books.
Wow.
Yeah. And she said, okay, we've been married 18 years. I've known you 18 and a half, 19. You've never, ever, ever mentioned this before. Where did that idea come from? And I just kind of related the story. I've done theater and I would sing solos at church and narrate the cantata. I was a newscaster when I was aboard ship. They had a closed circuit TV. So I said, I'll volunteer to do the news every night. So using my voice and reading out loud is something that I had always done. So I thought, well, why not get paid for it for a change? And so I thought recording books would be a great idea. And she said three magic words. Let's try that.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we did. Yeah.
And it has turned out well for you. It has been
a good thing. People I have never made a killing, but I've made a living, and I absolutely love what I do.
Oh, that's
love
so fun.
What I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing greater than doing what God has called you and to do and made you to do. And so
gifted you to do.
That's right. Right.
Exactly. And
you are very gifted at reading audiobooks. Our family loves your audiobooks very much.
That's great.
We travel a lot. We are on the road and in the car a whole lot. And so oftentimes that is our school. We listen to audiobooks all the time.
Oh my gosh.
And so we've really enjoyed listening to your audiobooks, which is why I'm really excited to have you on the podcast today.
Great.
Talk about... Well, you know what? Let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back. And I want to talk about the whole process of recording books, how you find the books and record them and all that. So let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Every year, parents just like you are discovering Classical Conversations, a vibrant, supportive, Christian homeschooling program. Parents seeking alternatives to traditional education find Classical Conversations gives their children the best possible opportunities to succeed in grade school, middle school, high school, and beyond, to prepare them for a lifetime of success, no matter what their goals for the future. So if you're considering homeschooling and you don't know where to start, or if you're already homeschooling and you want to explore another option, we've been equipping parents since 1997 with the resources, tools, guidance, and encouragement they need to homeschool their children with confidence. And we'd love nothing more than for you and your family to join us in our mission to know God and make Him known. Visit our website at classicalconversations.com to find a nearby community and to learn more about homeschooling the Classical Conversations way. Classical Conversations, Christian homeschooling simplified.
So we're back with Jim Hodges talking about audiobooks. Tell us about your whole business of audiobooks, how you decide what books you're going to read, and just how this whole thing has unfolded for you.
Okay. I've always loved history. I've always been an adventurous person. That's why I joined the Navy. And fortunately for me, my wife is also an adventurous person who I met in the Navy.
Oh.
So she was on active duty and we just happened to get stationed together. And that's a whole nother wonderful, wonderful story. But when I first decided that I wanted to record books, I thought I would record the Horatio Alger books, which I had heard about and learned about when I was in elementary school.
Okay.
Rags to riches stories, you know. There were hundreds of them. They were pretty much rote. But I actually recorded one in a friend's sound studio. He worked at a radio station. But I felt like I had to leave certain things out. I wasn't comfortable with some of the things that he had his characters do. Mm-hmm. So that got put aside. So I asked all of my homeschool friends, hey, I'm looking for an author who I could feel comfortable recording his books or their books, because I didn't know if it was going to be a male or female. And everybody said, George Alfred Henty, George Alfred Henty, George Alfred Henty. So I said, okay, well, let me get a couple of those from Ruby Reeves, a friend of ours who was actually selling the books. And I read a couple of them and they were like, this young man is just the most amazing, the hero character, the protagonist, just the most amazing young man you'd ever want to meet. Almost perfect in every way, but not quite. You know, that's like a real human being.
Sure.
Who is industrious and respectful and reverent and active and deferential to authority and just all of these great character qualities. And he gets himself hooked up with famous people from history, and he's at all the famous battles and the marches and the events from history. And he ends up, you know, getting the girl, and he's rich at the end of the book. So it's kind of a pattern. But I learned more history from this guy than I ever knew before, and I very much wanted to record books that had good male, strong male role models. Mm. And so I asked a little bit more. I said, okay, are all of his books like this? And everybody said, they're all like that. I said, and how many did he write? And he said, 122.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize he had written that many. Goodness.
So I thought, okay, they're out of copyright. I don't have to pay any royalties. They're fantastic books. Their history, their geography, their advanced use of the English language. The author was Cambridge educated, a newspaper reporter, a military guy. A real Renaissance man in 1800s England. And so these were just a great package. And so I've now recorded, I do unabridged recordings. I read every single word that's in the book. I've recorded 30 of them.
Okay.
So I've got, you know, 92 to go or something like that. And I'll have them all done. But the process to getting one done is actually pretty involved because of the advanced vocabulary, because of the breadth of locations, because of the numbers of people that he encounters. I spend a month before I turn the microphone on researching the correct pronunciation of things and getting a mental map of where things are going. Because if you can see it in your head while you're saying it, you can say it more clearly.
Sure.
I mark up the text, putting, you know, an underline on a word that needs to be emphasized, or a comma where there needs to be one for the sentence to make sense. So there's a whole lot of prep work, figuring out what character voices to give each of the people, knowing where the story ends up from where it begins, so you know how to present the character in the first place and how they develop over time. So there's just a lot of prep work that goes into it. And then you turn the microphone on, and, you know, I record 1 hour a day. That's it. Because I can hear my voice quality degrading, especially if I'm doing a lot of character voices, because, you know, you do a little old man or a young girl, or, you know, and you do all of the different voices. You're using all of these different parts of your vocal cords and wearing them out. So you have to be a little bit judicious with your use of that time. So anyway, I recorded a couple of his books and contacted people that were distributing the books themselves and said, hey, I've done an unabridged recording of With Lee in Virginia or In Freedom's Cause. Would you like a copy? I think your customers might like them. And virtually everybody that I sent a sample to ordered. So it was like, wow, okay, great. So I just kept doing it.
That is awesome. So when you do the character voices, because I was thinking about this the other day, do you play around with the different characters as you're reading the book? And then do you have, I mean, I think what would make sense in my mind would be to, you know, highlight the different characters in different colors or something like that. Like, how do you know what character you're reading before you get to it to move into that character voice?
I used to read right out of the book itself. Okay. And I've discovered that I'm better if I have the text on half of my screen and then the recording software on the other half of the screen. So what I do is I actually have a file folder now on my computer with a couple hundred characters.
Okay.
And my take on that character's lines, so that, I mean, I have to reuse some voices.
Sure.
All the time.
Right.
In fact, the hero character has the exact same voice in every I mean, it's the same, you know, because I have a reasonable repertoire. I don't have a vast repertoire.
Sure.
But I try to do accents, and, you know, I do French accents and British accents and old and young and boys and girls, and, you know, and so I can go back and record like the first sentence of a character in the book. Mm-hmm. I've assigned a voice in my head, and then I just read that guy's first line. Then I stop and I cut and paste that, and I create a file with the character's name, Captain
okay.
Smoot.
Okay.
And then I put that audio file in there. So anytime he comes up again, if I forget what his voice sounded like because he's been gone for three chapters,
I can go
listen
okay.
to him again. And then when I run across, and you know, you make mistakes when you record.
Sure.
And so you edit out your mistakes. So what you guys hear is the 30-minute edition of an originally 45 or 50-minute
right.
recording, because I've taken out, you know, repeated lines and mistakes and coughs and
right. sneezes.
Somebody's a plane flying over, or, you know, whatever. So,
yes.
So that the recording phase takes, the prep phase takes a month, the recording phase takes a month, the cleanup, mastering, designing the CD cover and all of that is basically another month. So each book, each really long book, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 hour book, takes at least 3 months to get
that done.
Wow. Okay. It's a long process.
That is a long process.
I just recorded my longest book ever.
Okay.
Mark Twain.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wrote Joan of Arc.
Wow.
Nobody knows Mark Twain wrote Joan of Arc.
I didn't know that.
15 hours and 50 minutes long book. And I think it's the best book I've ever recorded. I just fell in love with the book, with Twain's style. I fell in love with Joan of Arc. I learned a whole lot about the history. Just an amazing book. And that took a long time.
Yeah.
To end up with almost 16-hour audiobook is just a big project.
Sure, sure. You know, it's funny because I think when people, you know, whether they're listening to the podcast or they are watching a movie, you know, we've been working on our documentary for 2.5 years now. Well, it's going to be an hour and a half long documentary. It doesn't take an hour and a half long to make an hour and a half long documentary. It takes a really long time. And the same with you as you're recording these books. You know, a 15-hour book doesn't take you 15 hours. You don't sit down and do it all in one reading, or even do 15 one-hour segments. It takes hours and hours of practicing, editing, redoing, rereading. And so I love that you put so much heart into
these
books.
It helps that I love what I do, and I did theater. I did high school, college, and community theater many years ago, and I love to perform, but I want somebody else's words. Don't ask me to come up with something. Just give me the text and I'll do it. And I just get into it. It's fun.
Well, it shows in your reading, very much so. You do an excellent job of it. So as you travel to different conventions and you're talking to different homeschool families and kids, who do you find are the families or kids who listen most to audiobooks? And when do they do that? How do they tie that into their homeschool?
The best. I mean, a lot of people will listen to them, obviously, you know, driving to soccer practice or violin lessons or doctor's appointments or whatever. In the car is probably the number one place where people listen. But this number two on the list is, you know, quiet time, in your room time, family time in the evenings, where they're literally just gathering around the CD player and listening to an audiobook. I very much encourage them to let their younger kids in particular play with Legos or draw or color or something, because young hands that are busy can actually listen better than hands that
are
supposed to be, you know, in their laps. I mean, no child is very few children, let me put it that way, very few children can just sit and listen.
Right.
But I think the best counsel, the advice, method that one family used that I've heard is they'll get a new audiobook of mine, and the chapters are roughly 30 minutes, 30, 35, 40. Some are shorter, some are longer. These are the Henty novels. They're pretty much right around 30 minutes. Well, what they will do is they'll go to the kitchen at lunch and say, okay, turn it on. And then everybody makes their lunch. Everybody sits and eats their lunch. But they're all listening.
Right.
There's no talking going on. They're just listening to the story. And then at the end of the half hour or whatever it is, they've had their lunch. Mom turns it off. She lets them listen to one chapter, and then she talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, talk about the words and the definitions and how's this person acting and how's that person acting and making sure the younger ones are following along in the storyline. And then they'll do that until they get through the whole book. And then once mom's been through it once with everybody, then it's like, okay, who wants it? And then they will go off and listen to it on their own time. But I would say primarily it's car.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of need to have a half an hour in the car, because otherwise you're chopping up a chapter.
Right.
Better to try to get through the end of the chapter or pick a book with shorter chapters or something like that.
Yes.
I don't know. But, you know, car, quiet time, and evenings. I mean, I've had a mom email me and say, you have become part of our evening tradition in the wintertime, especially.
Fun.
They put a fire in the fireplace, they do the dishes, and then they all sit around and listen to me in front of the fireplace as a family in the evening. And it's just really gratifying to be.
Yeah. That's exciting.
Much a part of people's lives. It's really kind of neat.
Yeah, that's so cool. I cannot tell you how many times we pull up to the front of our house and we're still listening, and the kids are like, no, don't turn it off. So we just sit there for another, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, because we have to hear what happens at the end of that chapter.
Right.
And you just cannot, you can't just turn the car off in the middle of a chapter or a sentence.
Right.
So I think our neighbors probably think we're crazy, because so often we sit there and we're just
we probably look like
we're crazy, because we're just sitting there listening to what seems like nothing to them. What subjects can use the help of audiobooks, thinking through homeschooling, and obviously history, because
you read
a lot of historical books.
The history is, since it's my favorite subject, the history is obviously number one. Number two is language.
Mm-hmm.
Henty in particular, Twain, these people were well-educated people. They had vast vocabularies. They used long and complex sentences. Andrew Pudua makes frequent mention of it's whatever comes in is what's going to come
out
when they're writing, when they're communicating. So if you get good literature and good vocabulary and good use of the language coming in when it's time for them to communicate with the world on whatever their subject is, that's how it's going to come back out. So language for sure. Geography.
Mm-hmm.
These books take place in Australia and the United States and all over Europe and the Middle East and Russia and, you know, just all over the place. In fact, I will sometimes choose a title because the storyline takes place in a new location, because I want there to be that breadth of understanding of the world geography in the next generation of kids too. So absolutely. And the hero character is just an amazingly fine young man, so character training is just infused throughout these storylines. And that's, like I said, that was my primary motivation for choosing Henty to record. The hero character is the kind of young man that we need.
Yeah.
And so, sure, we can hang history and geography and language onto that.
Sure.
'Cause to me, that was his primary motivation, was to develop the next generation of, you know, proud Englishmen.
Yeah.
And you know, I met a gentleman once who was a big, big Henty fan. And it was his theory that Henty trained the World War I and the World War II British generation of young men.
Interesting.
Because he was in Downton Abbey season 3, mm-hmm. where they're bringing the World War I wounded soldiers into Downton Abbey as a recuperation center, they actually tell them, we've got a whole slew of Henties on the shelf. You know, there's plenty for you to read. Help yourself. And that was how much a part of wow. British culture he was, that all of these men knew who Henty was. Of course they knew who Henty was. They all read him growing up. And then the World War II generation as well. So, he's had a Louis L'Amour read Henty growing up. F. Scott Fitzgerald read Henty.
Wow.
Agatha Christie read Henty. Arthur Schlesinger Jr., 2-time winner of the Nobel Prize in History, read Henty. I mean, some serious people, authors sure. and historians and, you know, read Henty growing mm-hmm. up and was a formative part of their education. Just so anyway, he was an amazing guy.
That's awesome. And so you don't obviously have just Henty books.
No.
You have a whole lot more than that. Very quickly, because we're almost out of time, talk about some of the other books that you offer, the other audiobooks that you offer.
Got a lot of children's stuff. Mm-hmm. Todd Wilson, I mentioned in our pre-show, he's written a lot of Christ-centered Christmas stories that I've recorded.
Okay.
American History Stories of the Pilgrims. Mm-hmm. I've read Treasure Island. I've read Frederick Douglass. I've read, you know, classics, children's, yep. overtly Christian, and Henty. I mean, we're up to like 72 okay. different titles to wow. choose from. So if you want to see what I've got, you can head on over. It's a very curious and confusing web address. It's called jimhodgesaudiobooks.com.
Yep, yes. That's right. We'll link back to that in the show notes as well. Because for those listening, there are so many great opportunities and things that he offers on his website. So definitely go and check those out. Our family, I don't know how many we own. I think 13 or 14 at this point. And are so much enjoying listening to them. So so we know where people can find you. I would love for you, just as we close this out, and then I actually want to continue on just for a few minutes for the Backstage Pass members, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But I would love for you to give encouragement to homeschool dads. We have a lot of dads who listen to the podcast, which is really encouraging to us. I would love for you to talk to that homeschool dad and just encourage him in any way that you can. You know, why he should continue homeschooling his kids and mm-hmm. how he can maybe support his wife and his kids through this homeschool journey.
Okay. Do the dishes.
I love it. Three simple words.
You know, it's one of the things that I struggled with when we were homeschooling was the disarray that I was presented with when I got home mm-hmm. from a hard day at work, stressful day at work. That just really bugged me. But I got to tell you, the most important thing that happens when you're homeschooling your kids is that you can develop a really good relationship with them. That was Monica's primary focus. Mm-hmm. I did my best. I was a stressed out dad in a, you know, reasonably good job, but there was a major, you know, braces and piano lessons mm-hmm. and all of those expenses that come with homeschooling that you get for free with your taxes if you go to public school. All of these, it's a stressful thing for a dad. I would just say, hang in there. Do what you can to help around the house. Do what you can to support your wife. In fact, this is a major one. Date your kids, date your wife. Mm-hmm. We had a date night with our kids. I would take one kid out every week. Then it would be Luke's turn. Next week was Shannon's turn. The week after that was Matt's turn. So they would get it, you know, every 3 weeks or so. And I would say, what do you want to do? We just go out for ice cream, go cruise the mall, go see a movie, go, you know, whatever. And yeah. It was just hangout time.
Yeah.
And then Monica and I went out on dates every week. If we had to pay a babysitter, we paid a babysitter. If the kids got old enough, then, you know, Luke could watch them and we could leave them and we wouldn't go out for very long. I mean, sometimes our dates were grocery shopping together. Because, you know, it's hard to fit those things in. But my oldest son, the Navy paid for him to go to Harvard for his MBA. My youngest son earned a full boat ride to any state school in the state of Oklahoma. Shannon went a different way. She became an au pair in France and learned French. Wow. She taught English in Korea, South Korea. She was more interested in language and travels, but she got her associate's degree, and then she got married, and she and her husband went to China and taught English in China for a year. So the kids are going to go different ways, and they're going to do different things, but it is absolutely worth it. Most things that are worth it in the long run are hard in the short run.
Yes.
Homeschooling can be hard in the short run, but the long run is worth it.
Yes. Amen. Well, thank you for that. We are out of time for the podcast, but for those of you who are on the Backstage Pass membership site, we're going to continue on. We're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to talk about families with special needs and how audiobooks can play into their homeschooling and help them. We're also going to, I want to ask you about tips that you can give parents for reading aloud. When we get to that, and I know that that's a big thing for a lot of parents. It was something for me when I first started reading aloud to my kids that was a little intimidating to me. And so I want to get some of your advice on that. Okay. And then I would love for you to do a short read for us. So I think you've got a book that you're going to do that for. So for those of you listening, thank you again for sticking with us today, listening to the podcast. You are a great blessing and encouragement to us. Have a great rest of your day, and we will see you next week.